All right, we're here with Enny Hickman and Paul George. Welcome, guys. We're at the 2025 In the Father's Footsteps Men's Conference in Oklahoma City. It's been a great conference so far. Enny, you opened up really strong.
Oh, thanks.
I felt like.
Thanks.
Conference.
Guys were saying like, oh, he was saying he's like a bunt. He's starting it off. And he was like, that was a grand slam.
Oh, man.
So you killed it.
Yeah.
I did like rhetorically the device of, like, I'm just about to, it's just a bunt. Don't get your hopes up.
He set the standards low.
Yeah, that's what we do.
You have to be honest. Like, did you guys feel
like Barry Bonds getting up there like he's about to bunt?
Roid monster. Yeah, exactly. No, I really didn't know. I mean, sometimes coming into these conferences, you have no idea who was there before you. And last night, they sort of honored us, and they talked about past speakers. And
Don't you guys think that Enny has this perfect like balance of like just towing the line but not going over
not
with
going
some
over.
Of his jokes?
Oh yeah, it was great.
That Abraham
joke.
Yes. Oh yeah,
that's a good one.
I loved that one. I was out here watching it on the monitor, and I was like, I don't know if they're. I can't tell if they're laughing in there. But I was laughing.
Yeah, it was a delayed laugh. Like, So if you think about Abraham and the risk of, risking this whole idea of sacrificing his son, that was crazy. Like, that's insane. Like, who does that? Who listens to the Lord like that? And it was just this, I was preparing for a talk and, just reading through his story and just laughing so hard when I got to the part of circumcision where, like,
I want you to know that
he probably wasn't laughing.
He was not laughing, but he just did what God said. That's insane, right? Yeah. So we play up the sacrifice of Isaac, but listen, that wasn't the first time that he was, asked to do something super difficult for the Lord. Like, I'm going to make a covenant between us, but I need you to chop off just a bit of your penis.
You bring up a great point, though. Like, I think for all of us as men, maybe we've never walked the steps of Abraham, but like we've all been at like a place in our life where we're toeing the line and God's asked us to do something.
Correct.
And we've done it. Maybe it's get married. Maybe it's that day that you walk, your wife was walking down the aisle. Mm. You're like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
This is crazy. Or that next step that God's asking you to do. I've failed more times than I haven't, but the times that I have just been like, okay, I'll do it, man. Right.
Risky, man. Faith, like living faith it should be risky. You should be risking something always, right?
Yeah.
I
feel exactly what you're saying, Paul. Yeah. And the Lord has never asked me to like remove any parts of my body.
Right.
So, what excuse do I have?
Not yet.
Yeah. Paul's over here. You're like, you have not yet had to give.
Yeah. 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 But like, And I'm like thinking about what shoes I'm going to wear, will they like my shoes? not able to take any kind of risks at all. It's a good point, man. It's like, we're going to be called to it eventually to give something, and it's not to compare, it's all very risky. I see that. I work with, young people quite often and, the college kid, the males, the high school, it's changing the shift, the tide is turning a little bit, but you see so many guys out there that are just not ready to take a risk on anything. You see it in the lack of...
Yeah, but what do you think that is, though? Because, like, if you go back to just when you were a young teenager or adult, like, we're all can think back. And we think now, times have changed. And in some ways, like, you can kind of say that, but there, for all of us, I bet you can think back to, like, there was a person, another man, a mentor that pushed you. That like
100%.
Yeah, that like when you were fearful about doing something, maybe it was like a risk in like giving your life to Christ or coming into the church, or for me like getting married because I came from a divorced home, or just different things, risks. There were people in my life who like pushed me, like literally shoved me. And I think what's absent today more than anything with young guys is not that there's not enough men pushing them. Maybe their dads aren't, or they don't have mentors to just, you could do this. Go ask that girl out. don't worry about failure.
Yeah.
I'm going to push you into failure, and that's what you're going to learn.
Yeah. You were that man, Paul.
That man is you.
That man is you. You were that man. He was the guy. Paul was a senior in college, and I was a senior in high school. Maybe we were juniors. Anyway, whatever the case.
Around that,
just
yeah.
enough. 4 years ahead of me. He used to call me when I was at University of Texas. He'd call me. He wouldn't relent. He'd call me up and be like,
As a good friend would.
You got to remember, this is on a landline.
Oh, yeah. Landline. Oh, yeah.
Landline.
Yep. You know, like, he hit your pager up. You went back to the landline.
Yeah, not even, man. Yeah. I had my frosted tips, you know. And he would say something like this. He would go straight forward. He'd be like, "Hey, bro, what's up? You smoking weed?"
"What are you doing right now, man?"
"Yeah.
You still smoking weed?"
Yeah.
"Like, how'd you know?" I was like, "It was a strong guess."
"You're in Austin."
Over the phone.
Yeah, right. Oh, man, it was just what I needed. So I agree. I think there is a lack of mentors. Just willing to say, like, when are you going to make this decision?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
When are you going to make the hard call, you know, to follow Christ or do that thing?
Yeah.
But I will jump on the other side, because I think, like, part of the marriage thing, part of the going for something big was I was attracted to my fiance, you know.
As like, one should be.
You
were ready.
I had a desire for that, mm-hmm. for her. I knew what marriage meant for me. And
it was all upside.
Some of the dopamine hits that, you know, young people are getting today just through the computer, through gaming, whatever it might be, has kind of prevented them from seeing
from pursuing
a real good
from chasing
the girl
what they want.
Go for it, because it's better on the other side. They're
right,
kind of going,
I can get a dopamine hit on my phone instead of going walk up to the girl and talk to her.
That's gonna be my question. It's like, you have to have these mentors, but you also have to have men who are receptive. Mm-hmm. Who are like willing to hear the message. Like, there has to be this trust of understanding, like, you trusted Paul that he actually cared about you, not because he was asking you if you were still smoking or not, but that he actually cared about who you are. And it wasn't I'm judging you or anything like that. But the lack of men being able to even be dispositioned to receive seems to be something lost today.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Trust is real. Friendship is real.
Yeah.
I did know he was my friend. I knew he had the best, you know, my best interest in
mind. I mean, the conversation was like, "Hey, I love you. You need to stop doing that."
Yeah.
Yeah.
"But I still love you."
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he knew that, you know, he knew if I called again and he was doing the same stupid stuff.
Yeah.
That I was going to continue. And I think that is really the art of mentorship for all of us as grown men, is investing in people's lives, no matter what ups and downs that they have. Right. Mm. You guys all have sons. We all do. You know, you disciple your own kids, but you guys need each other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Like, David, you say something, you know, right? You say something to his kids.
Oh, sure.
And they're like, "Whoa." And you're like, I just told my son the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you want your sons to rub elbows with other men who are going to reiterate
I've been teaching in my home that reinforces what I've been saying in the home.
And they get to the age where they tune you out.
Of course.
Right? And you're like, you go to Uncle David's house now.
Yeah, you know, that's what I love about organizations like Fraternus. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. We don't have Fraternus in our area, but, you know, where you just get, it's this idea of having men come together. Mm. And it's actually focused on adult men having camaraderie. And that you slowly welcome these children. You know, it's not about like, "Hey, here's a program for kids."
It's intentional mentorship.
Yes, I mean, it's
that's exactly right.
So,
but I like where you're going with that. It's almost like they need to see the model of that,
right?
Those relationships, and you know, if we're kid centric and we're like, "Little kids, let me tell you how," it's
bigger kids.
It's over, right?
Yeah.
But if you say, "Look, here's what Dad's up to. Here's the guys. This is how we approach life together. And son, come a little closer." Like, it's that invitation into the good life. It's the invitation of, like, this is what the adults do. You know, I love that idea. And that way, it's not, because sometimes it's offensive. You go straight at it. You want to, like, the gospel is attractive. living a free life, living a man, you know, a manly, you know, virtuous life is it should be attractive. And so for young people to see, that's kind of what I was getting at with the desires. It's like,
sure,
do they desire it? Mm-hmm. Because it's just so different from when I, you know, when we were growing up.
Yes.
It's like
it's a natural desire. It's just, it's kind of hidden under the all these like impulses for other things that are just more immediate.
So it's so easy. It's so easy. Whereas it does feel like friendships take time, and you know, it's that energy put forth. So thanks, Paul. Really.
So my question for you guys is, you know, as a man who's raising kids and, you know, being in the world trying to do my best, how do I recognize those opportunities where maybe it is like, this isn't my opportunity for mentorship? Because if I just say, oh, I'm going to go out there and mentor today, you know, like that's it's probably going to go poorly if I just, so how do you identify? Yeah, it would be weird.
Yeah, don't be weird.
Yeah, don't be weird about it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's nothing worse. If he would have approached me and said something like, I will mentor you.
You want to get into my weight?
Yeah, seriously. I'd just be like, no thanks, man. But no, I saw a man who I wanted to be like. Uh-huh. And I think there's, you know, and you were normal. Like he could throw a football. He could, you know, I knew he could fish. All of those things that I enjoyed already. And I think that's there's something there that,
but I think we
approach people in the natural.
Yeah.
Right.
In the human
piece. And then you get to there, you build that.
But
trust
intentionally
that way.
Putting yourself in a place where you're mentoring maybe young men, you know, younger than you, right. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's through a fraternist group or some type of men's group you start, or the church, or things like that. Like one of the things I did for my son when he got into high school and wanted to play sports, we discerned moving him obviously to a school that had good academics, that was Catholic, faith, had the spirituality, but had sports because, you know, there were some things that he was good at. But we discerned it through the lenses, which school has the coaches that are living their faith? Because he was tuning me out as a teenager, which is normal, but I needed him to rub elbows with other men that were saying the things that I was saying.
That's
in a different platform.
That's awesome.
So that's
you mean you weren't just walking in with your book?
Right, here's my book.
Yeah.
But that's actually how we discerned it.
Yeah.
Who's going to rub elbows with my son? It's going to give him the best chance to take his bumps and bruises in high school as a teenager, but come out on the back end saying, well, Coach Lance, man, he always lived the gospel, sort of like my dad's trying to do. Like, you see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So most people don't discern kind of through that lens, but my encouragement to parents and men is like, you always discern things through the lenses of what's good for your kid's soul, you know?
Absolutely.
I think we downplay coaches, you know? I think...
Because they're mentors. They're natural men.
When you brought that setting up, you said like, so guys who have pushed you over the edge, my first thought was my football coach.
Yes.
Like,
100%.
You know, weight and strength.
I also
my
was
wrestling
coaches.
Like,
yeah.
That was where,
100%.
Those were the first guys that came to my mind.
Yeah. They're like, you could do it. Let's just push through. You can go further than you think.
Yeah.
Right?
And they were
one more rep.
Because they were hard on you. They weren't just helping you. They were like, I remember having coaches who say, hey, that wasn't good enough. And like, that was a shock.
Right.
Yeah.
But if he hadn't said that to me, and then I went out and did better.
Right.
Only because he told me that wasn't good enough.
That you could, though.
You know? Yeah. And he's not having to, like, anyway, totally.
So in the state tournament my senior year, I got a staph infection. Bad one. You know, baseball players, you slide in that dirt so much. It's just like, so I had a bad staph infection. I had to go to the hospital.
Dang.
And I was trying to play for as long as I possibly could, you know, and then it just became unbearable and they were like, you got to go and have it drained. And this is our ninth state championship. Okay. And
took you a while to get out of high school.
It was 9 years in a row.
It's a long staph infection.
But this is tremendous staph infection.
He had that beard by the time he graduated.
Yeah. No, he came to the he left the game to come and check on me. And so yes, he was the one that was like, you know, busting me. when I did not perform as best as he knew I could. Mm. But he was also the one that would sit next to me on the bench and, you know, gently say, hey, and guess what? You're great. And I know you can do this. And yeah, so when I think about mentors in my life, it's, you know, dad, grandpa, coaches, you know, and yeah. And I think it is downplayed today. It's like at the high schools, it's like, oh, that's the coach. You know, it's mm-hmm. a side thing, but
they can make or break
important.
A kid's life.
So yeah. important. 100%. So important mm-hmm. for sure.
I just love that you were discerning that, like, based on how much does a coach practice his faith? I just don't think I would have thought about that. You yeah. know?
Well, you're really not that holy. So that's,
yeah, I mean, I got problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
It's not any wonder.
I was just talking to a priest about a lot of them. So.
You went to confession. Good, yeah. man. Yeah. You're the most holy now yeah, of all of us.
Well, that was like 20 minutes ago. So
you've been a lot can happen in 20 minutes.
But yeah, isn't that true though? Like in that, at that age group, we want to be seen. We want to be loved, yeah. right? You want that affection towards somebody mm-hmm. else, right?
Right.
That to say, like, that was great. That was great. You want the guy to push you, but you also want him to pick you up and say, like, I'm freaking proud of you. Mm. Like yeah. that was a heck of a home run, or that you took that shot. Yeah. I knew you could do it. Because we want that glimpse of, we want that gaze upon somebody from a beloved.
We want to know our goodness.
Yeah, and that's like a little sliver of the gaze of our Father in heaven.
Mm. Right. 100%.
Yeah, because we are good. It's something I forget so often, right? It's like, yeah. and we need each other to remind us of that. I mean, our, you know, my wife does it pretty well, but it's not the same. Like when a brother says, yeah. great job.
Yeah.
Wow, man. It's like balm. It's so, yeah. Yeah. It really does. It can, or a father, you know, that's that same idea, because that is that glimpse, right? Mm-hmm. Into like our true identity as sons of the Father. Yeah, and how much that propels us mm-hmm. into the to the
and
next
desires
level.
Us. Yeah,
yeah.
It makes us desire that even more.
I want to go deeper. Yeah, totally. So.
Yeah, David, to kind of speak into what you're saying, I think one of the biggest mistakes that parents make, particularly if you could just say Catholic parents, is they are so afraid for their kids to fail. So they don't push them out there a little bit into the world to get some bumps and bruises. And then therefore they don't really become disciples in the world because they've just been like kind of coddled. We don't want you to go too far because we don't want you to mess up. It's with good intentions, mm-hmm. but risking letting them kind of, you know, grow and get out there and rub elbows with other people. And it launches them into lifelong discipleship. And I'm just speaking through the lens of my adult kids now, right? It's so hard watching it though, because you're just like, man, that was a failure. But they're going to get up. They got people around them. We're around them. They got their faith around them. And I look at families who have really protected their kids. Their kids just still haven't integrated into the world. They're still kind of not even practicing their faith.
Or they see the world and all of a sudden they've got the autonomy to do whatever. And they don't know how to, you know, how to deal with it.
It's not throwing them out there by themselves. It's throwing them out there with
Amish.
Other people that are going to mentor them besides you as a parent, you know, and we're so afraid to get them outside of our reach, you know, but God takes care of that, man. Like if you're really intentional about it.
Thank God. I feel the same way about my adult children too. Cause like, it does get scary there for a second.
Yeah.
Like, oh no.
Right.
Did we do it right?
Right.
There's no silver bullet, you know, really and truly.
There's not. But there are a lot of golden BBs.
There's
you know, and so.
Yeah, like, no, totally. And you can't. Yeah.
There are.
It's fantastic. Yeah. So that we're able to see.
And
on
it
the
is
other side.
BBs.
Yeah.
Right.
It
it's
is.
Not a bullet. It
right.
is a, you know, bunch of BBs that are
shotgun.
Set in place. Yeah.
But that's what a fatherhood does, right? You know, we always talk about providing and protecting. All men can grasp that because there's natural aspects to that. But the other part that is a role of the father is establishing your children to go out into the world to make disciples.
Right.
Like you can't just let them, you can't just be hovering over them. Like I want to establish you into society to where you are living out your virtues so that way you can go out and make disciples.
Right.
I can't do it for you forever. I can't give you my prayer life. because it's my prayer life.
Right.
But I can establish a prayer life habit for you
right.
to have.
You can watch me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can watch your mother and kind of model that. And hopefully you'll grow into your own disciple and have your own prayer life and rhythm, you know, as you get older, yes. you know. So good. I mean, I'm kind of in the, you know, you have 9 kids. I mean, between us all, how many kids we have? God knows what.
75.
I'm just kidding. I have 5. You have 6. How many? You have
9.
5. So yeah. Two. We could, offense and a defense, 11 on 11.
25. That's 25. Yeah. That's 25 kids, right? Did I do the math right? Is that 9, 16? Yeah, 25.
Okay, we have 11 on 11 and a punter and a kicker.
That's right.
Boom.
Oh, that's ready. Two full baseball teams. I mean, you could definitely play.
That's crazy.
Play a full game with 25.
I have kids who
give
won't.
Some DH.
We should know before we get too down the roster list that my youngest son is only 4 months old, so he's great. He's not any good.
He can play right.
Terrible.
He can play right field.
He's terrible at baseball.
No, dude. Catcher. Do I get snow cone?
Snow cone after the game.
Just, oh my gosh.
Get pummeled, man.
That's great. Yeah. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. But he is bad at baseball.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
He
yeah,
is. Yeah, I'm sure.
We're
he
still
is.
Working on it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. You got to keep working.
Yeah.
My 4 year, I've got a 12 year old playing baseball, you know, so it's his 12 year old year, huge year, you know, for it might be the, you know, my summit, you know, of my.
This is going to be the apex of your
career. Yeah, this is going to be the apex.
I
don't
career.
Know. It might have been 12. For me. I think it was all downhill after that. No, I got to play for a while. But the idea, you know, of his 12-year-old year, and then my 4-year-old wanted to play too, and I'm like, I'm not doing this and this at the same time. But next year, I'll be right back out there. This is 13 years of being a little league coach.
See, that's mentorship. Natural mentorship, you know.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And nobody knows who I am. Nobody care. I can, yeah, just get out there, get fungo. When I get mad, I'll just hit a hard fungo to him. You know,
do you have your clipboard?
You ever do that? yeah. Come on.
A coach does need something like to throw or like
hat.
Like a hat is great.
Hat.
That it's kind of like a dad.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but
like every now and then your kids need to kind of be a little afraid of you.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Right. My wife's like, they're afraid of you. I was like, that's kind of a little bit.
I know.
Okay.
I nurture that fear.
That's right. I've been working on this.
Yeah. Like they got to know dad's a little crazy.
I mean, there is
across the line.
My wife, she'll be in there like, trying to get on to the kids, you know, and all I have to do is show up. If I walk into the room, they're like, they look over at me and I just look at them and I can walk out.
Yeah.
It's the silverback.
It's incredible.
It's the silverback.
Yeah.
Silverback.
Like, yeah. I do have that. But it's also frustrating because then they only go to her, right? To ask for things, you know,
right.
And I'm like, I'm right here. And they're like, but.
We thought you would get mad.
Yeah, exactly. I'm mad now. Quit bogging bomb.
That's funny.
You will talk to me about this.
Yeah, right.
My son and I just did a father-son retreat together.
Dude, I saw that. That's
He's 22. And so he spoke to the teenage guys.
Okay.
And I spoke to the
dads.
Oh,
so you were like putting on a retreat.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, as we were talking before, I was like, how are you gonna start your talk, whatever? And he was kind of making me laugh. He's like, I don't really know. So after it was over, I was like, how'd it go? He's like, good. I was like, what? How'd you start your talk? He said, well, I just walked in, all the teenage boys, and I said, how many of you guys have ever been afraid of your dad? He said, hey, all of them raised their hand. He's like, okay, we could all relate.
Yeah.
And then he told a story of like how, you know, like I pummeled him one day, you know, just like,
sure.
And he was like, I'm never messing with my dad again.
Oh, isn't it funny how kids, like, and adults do it too. They like brag about, they're almost proud about being.
Well, they don't want you to be too soft.
You know, it's like, oh, either. I used to get whooped. When, you know, and it's almost like proud of it. And
there's this balance
strange
of
how
like,
people talk about it.
There's got to be a balance of like this, you know, nurturing father and a father that's just and has stern, you know, like mm-hmm.
There's a line.
It's a harder balance it is for us than it is for our wives,
right? Because it's meekness. It's strength under control.
Yeah.
Right? My dad is strong enough to wreck havoc or do whatever he wants to do, whatever he demands.
Your dad actually is.
Yeah, my dad. I still can't beat
up
my dad.
You should meet his dad. He's here.
We're still afraid of him.
Yeah, we're still afraid of him.
Find the biggest dude here.
Your dad?
Yeah, my dad.
No kidding.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what meekness is. It's strength under control.
Right.
Yeah, that is a difference, right? I know when I lose it, right? I know when I am out of control. And through the years, you develop that habit of like, I need to take a second.
It's more virtuous.
And realize, like, yeah. But it's amazing. I love that meekness. It's that strength under control because there is something. Yeah, there's something to that. There's something loving to that. Loving your children is creating, you know, creating boundaries, making sure that they, you know, that they understand that. And then when you cross the line,
I think they know it too. It's not.
The times I've apologized the most is when
I have been out of
control. I haven't been virtuous in those moments. I've crossed the line.
Yes. And that's hard to do. I have found the first time I had to apologize to one of my kids just because it's like, it was so hard.
Yeah.
I didn't anticipate how difficult it was going to be to apologize to a 4-year-old, you know, or.
Right.
But.
Yeah.
That's almost another virtue of learning the habit of that because you're going to mess up as a parent.
Yeah.
You know, my parents never said they're sorry. I mean, I'm sure they were, but they just never physically said it. And so when I went to apologize the first time, my wife's like, "You probably should." I was like, "Yeah, I know. How do I do that?"
Yeah.
She was like, "You just go do it."
Yeah. You've said it to me 1,000 times.
Yeah.
It was okay.
It was fine. Yeah. Like, here's a 4-year-old. Like, I'm a grown man. I'm shaking. Yeah. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Right. Oh my gosh.
And then, but they're like children. When you do that, it's like, "Will you forgive me?" They're like, "Oh, they're just the best."
Yeah.
You know, like, they just give you this huge hug. And
even teenagers are like that, man. They do. They get it. You're reminding me of something. I lost my temper one time, and my daughter, who's now 17, love you, Avila, if you ever listen to this, I sent her to timeout. There wasn't any spanking or anything, but she was destroyed. Mm. She was destroyed sitting in timeout. And she was humiliated. She was shameful. She was beating her head like this, you know, and I realized at that moment, that's it. Like, no, like I crossed the line there. My loving correction should not lead to a self-harm type of shame. Learning how to say, I was given that advice early on. Actually, somebody told me that. They're like, "Hey, here's the key. Always be ready to apologize to your spouse, to your, you know, and I practice that a couple times a day.
I want to ask you guys this question because you guys both have adult children. My youngest will be 10 in a couple months. So
oldest.
Yeah. My oldest. Mm-hmm. So she's still, you know, she's still a little girl, right?
Yeah.
Can you confirm me on that?
Yeah, please. Yeah. Totally. Please, yeah.
totally. Yeah, totally.
But I was just talking to Tim Carney. He's got, you know, adult kids too. It's like, for me, it's scary because I know I'm on the precipice of a new world. Mm-hmm. How do you, with this idea, especially with your sons, putting them out there, do you have any advice or what did you guys do to help them take risks? Because I think as a dad, that's really, this is like, kind of in our corner, right?
Yeah.
Women don't, I don't think that they're actually naturally, I don't think they have the natural predispositions to helping children take risks
because
they don't want to take any themselves. Right.
You know? Keep them safe.
Yeah. So what do you do? Sure. Like, what did you guys do?
Yeah. I mean, I would say, first of all, they are what they eat, you know? It's taking risks in controlled environments, right? So there's a ball field that you can, you know, play in, and you have all freedom here, but then there's boundaries, right? Like we don't, we will always spend the whole entire day of Sunday together, right? Wednesday nights is this, it's not just a free for all, right? And because their brains, that is, you know, through adolescence, they are trying to separate themselves from their parents. That's where that autonomy comes from, the liberation of like, I'm not just a child, but I am becoming my own person. But it's delicate because you have to create those boundaries for them. You got to create the playing field. And so You're not helicoptering. You know, you're not controlling every little who they're hanging out with, who they're, you know, where they. But the idea that there is some limit to that, right? So we made sure that we were friends with the families that our kids wanted to hang out with. We made sure that, you know, and that was varying degrees of morality and do they watch these movies or whatever.
They weren't always like Latin mass going.
Yeah, Catholic. It wasn't. Yeah, well, we had those too.
Yeah, sure.
Diversity.
But
you know?
Not always.
Yeah. We needed some fedora Catholics in their life too. But the idea that, you know, we were friends with the family. We tried to do as much stuff together as possible. But I think letting them take risks in, like outside, natural. We do a lot of things. Like, you know, our kids want to go camping. You know, when they're 15, 16, like, great. Like, here's the property. Here's the key. Go do the thing. So a lot of the outdoor stuff, you know, handing them a gun.
Yeah, teaching them.
At 10 years old and totally. Saying, this is powerful and this can kill. And this is, you know, but I trust you with it. And, you know, we've taught you how to do it. So I think a lot of outdoor stuff, that was the key there. And then, like, you know, and then there's the boundaries. There's no social media. No, you know, that's out of the question. You know, when we say go, I mean, until 17 is, you know, generally 16, 17, but like the idea, and even that's probably too young. But the point being, you know, we don't let them run wild in places that will lose their soul or, yeah. you know, or it's actually dangerous. There's a difference between risk and danger, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, so taking healthy risks. So they, that's what I would say.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think they're, you know, I want to push my kids to risk in things that will save their soul. Right. You know, I'm going to push you, go on that camp or that retreat, you know, and they see me model, but I want to push you to go. Oh, I don't want to go. No, I'm going to push. And I want to get them to risk the things where they don't lose their soul. Sports, outdoors, like, let me push you a little bit further. But at the same time, we're not traveling around the country to do that because you could lose your soul. So like there's that balance,
totally,
you know, of all that. But like as a father, as a dad, like I am the one that is going to tell my kids and push them to fail, because I know that failure at our age now, we know that failure doesn't define you and it won't hurt you. As a matter of fact, it's a great teacher.
Better for you.
I'll be there to pick you up when you don't make the team or this doesn't happen or you get rejected. It's okay. But if you don't let your kids fail, hands down, I just don't think they ever learn how to land on their feet,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But it's just, it's a failure without danger. Mm-hmm. That's a good,
Yeah. There's a difference there. But you know, I got five to go. So who knows? We might be here, you know, 10 years from now, like, boy, you really failed. Those top four, they were fine, but man, you really dropped the ball.
They lead the way and then they circle back.
Oh, they're doing great.
And they help
it's a
the little
joke,
ones.
Man.
It is
so
amazing
funny.
How the first one really sets the tone for all the other kids.
Got to get that first one, first couple, and then they kind of like, hard. The other ones are like, you know.
Yeah, it's hard. The first pancakes are never correct, you know.
Oh, no.
And then you overdo it with the second pancake.
Yeah.
And then you find a good.
Yeah, my oldest is married now. Having a baby, so it'd be a grandfather.
You did good on your first pancake.
Well, and I mean, we still, I mean, she, you know, she's awesome, but we still apologize to her. Like, we're so sorry we were so hard on you. Because with the first, she like.
It's so true, man.
We're still like, she'll bring some up. I was like, Lee, I am so sorry. We were just learning on you. Yeah. She's like, I know.
I tell Maddie, our oldest, I said, we grew up together. I don't know. She's like our 2-year-old, you know, sipping on a Dr. Pepper the other day. And she's like, I didn't drink a soda till I was like 10.
Yes. Right.
Like you're fine.
I'm the oldest. And it's like, I didn't have pop until.
Yeah, right.
Like I basically could pay for it myself.
Yeah, right.
And
exactly.
Then my youngest sister is like, she's like 3 years old. My mom's like, do you want a soda? It's like, what the heck, mom?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Don't you know that's bad for her?
100%.
Right. Oh, it is fun when they flip on the other side of the table too, and they start getting annoyed with their like adolescent sibling, younger siblings. You're like, it was just like 3 years ago when you were doing the same thing. We're all like that though, right?
Yeah.
This is cool.
Well, guys, thank you so much. Yeah. I really appreciate it. This has been a great conversation. Any, Paul, thanks for being here.
Of course.
Where can they follow up with you?
Sure.
Get more information.
Our passion right now is an organization that we founded a couple years ago called Amigos de Plas, and it's basically continuing the legacy of Blessed Stanley Rother in Santiago Atitlan, and just providing food and medicine, education, and Jesus to some beautiful, beautiful people, the Tzotzil Maya that Blessed Stanley Rother served. They're still there, and the village is still 99% indigenous Mayan. Mm. And it's a beautiful place. So that's what we're up to. Amigos de Aplas, APLAS, .org is where you can find out more about that.
Awesome.
So I appreciate
it. Such
people,
a good
people
ministry.
Go, people go
awesome.
Check that out.
Yeah, I'm easy. It's discovertheartofliving.com. I do a podcast. I go speak. I write, have a few books out, one for men, Holy Grit, that Adam mentioned, and then I do consulting for nonprofits on their strategic planning and their team. So, yeah, just trying to do the Lord's work, just like you guys, and really appreciate y'all's show. It's been really good to have over, I think Adam was saying, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I stopped counting.
So, yeah, you should. You really should.
All right, guys.
I appreciate it.
God bless you.
Thank you. God bless.
Too.